I'm going to start the House Committee on Education Subcommittee on Higher Education meeting for Monday, March 5th, 2007. We are fortunate to have our community college presidents round two today. And it's an informational hearing, gentlemen, on our community college system. And we're going to start off today with John Carnahan. Welcome, John. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us today. My name is John Carnahan. I'm the interim president at Tillamook Bay Community College. Three or four years ago, Tillamook Bay Community College found itself in the proverbial perfect storm. There was a point in time when, as you recall, we had less resources available to the state, and which impacted community colleges. Around the same time, we were dealing with the funding formula, and we're trying to make some changes that would meet the needs of all 17 community colleges rather than just in half of them, which had an impact on the funding formula and freezing our enrollments at a certain point in time till we kind of came out of that freeze so no one would get injured adversely through the process. And around that same time, the legislature made a change in how they reimbursed community college courses, particularly self-improvement courses. Made a decision not to reimburse self-improvement courses, which, as I recall, saved the state about $10 million, but essentially probably impacted 40,000 Oregonians. And if you look at this past May or November, when five or six community colleges went out to pass capital construction bond measures, I think that probably had a large impact on that. Those 40,000 individuals that were enrolled in self-improvement courses are people that voted, who were part of communities that supported community colleges, and community colleges in Oregon went from somewhere in the neighborhood of 390,000 people enrolled to about 350,000, of which the majority were in the self-improvement areas. And unfortunately, in trying to meet the needs of Tillamook County, the majority is Tillamook Community College grew over the last 25 years. The majority of the growth was in self-improvement courses, given the population. So as we come out of this freeze and out of the funding issues, Tillamook Community Bay Community College found itself with an enrollment that was about 40% less than when we went into that process because, essentially, of the self-improvement courses they offered. That had a negative impact on state resources from about $1.7 million, which was at the peak of Tillamook Bay's enrollment with self-improvement, to resources of about $900,000, which is our current enrollment, which is about 40% less than it was. So it was they were in a tough situation, and they began to look more like a junior college rather than a comprehensive community college, kind of hunkered down and let go of anything that was on the fringes and offered the more traditional lower division transfer courses, very few professional technical courses in those areas. Through the leadership of the board and the president during that downturn, they did some strategic planning, looked at what they needed to do for Tillamook County, and made several decisions. One was to create theirself a permanent campus. As you may know or may not know, they're currently located in an old funeral home, and we have four classrooms, don't have a huge capacity to grow even if we wanted to. So with your support in the last session of legislature, there was a $4.9 million capital construction appropriation for Tillamook Bay Community College. We've been out twice, came within a couple percentage points in May, three or four percentage points in November, and we think we have a really good chance tonight the board will approve a resolution to go back out in May. We've worked with the county commissioners and the Tillamook County Fair. One of the things that we heard from the community was they really wanted to know where this facility was going to be. And through a partnership with the Tillamook County Fair and the county commissioners, we've identified property on the Tillamook County Fairgrounds to locate the campus, a central location, a nice place, along with facilities in North and South County. So the board, you know, through their vision and strategic planning, decided to do that. They made a decision to go for independent accreditation, Tillamook Bay Community College.
Mr. Chair, there's a question. You mentioned North and South County. Where will those be?
We've been working with the Nehalem School District and a property right next to Nehalem High School for the South County Center. We've been working with the North County Recreational Service District up in Nehalem North and Neocortex, and let me get this right, because, you know, I've not been there a long time. Nehalem in the north and Nesteca in the south. Okay, near Nesteca High School in the South County, and in Nehalem North in the North County Recreational Service District.
That'd be Cloverdale, I guess.
It would be Cloverdale. That's correct, in the south. The board also made a decision to go for independent accreditation. Tillamook Bay has been accredited through a contract with Portland Community College. They've been wonderful to work with, been very supportive. However, they are the largest community college, if not the largest college, in the state of Oregon. Tillamook Bay is the smallest college, and so just simple systems processes doesn't allow, I think, Tillamook to be as flexible and as nimble as they could be through their own independent accreditation, and I think Portland Community College would appreciate that as well. But they've been wonderful partners and very supportive of what we're doing. So we've been to the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. We have applied for to become a candidate for accreditation. Our self-study will be in the fall of 2009. They also identified the need for a management information system. They really didn't have any systems internally to even if we were become accredited, to operate. So they've purchased a management information system. We're in the process of implementing that, and decided that they needed to grow, which was obvious. They just could not continue to survive and sustain themselves with the enrollment that they had without the self-improvement courses. So we've worked hard on some growth initiatives. Enrollment this year is up 22% over last year. We've developed some partnerships with the Creamery Association in Tillamook Cheese and Chemehuevin Community College to offer an agribusiness program for the dairies. We've been working with Stimson Lumber and Hampton Lumber and the local high schools to create industrial technology center at the high school that will probably be managed by Tillamook Bay Community College through partnerships with the Hampton and Simpson and the local school district. We have a new program in hospitality management working with the local high school districts through a consortium in culinary arts, and are providing some training in hospitality and tourism and culinary arts. We're in the process of applying through Portland Community College for an animal science and agriculture program, another professional technical program. Tillamook High School has 140 students currently enrolled in 4-H and FFA, so it's a natural for that community. So we're beginning to build the professional technical programs. We're rebranding our College Now program based on the Early Options program and re-engaging the local high schools in the Oconee and Nesteca and Tillamook school districts, which will allow us to grow. So the mast is back up. The wind's back in our sails. I think there's a bright future. I don't think there's any question in the next 3 or 4 years that Tillamook Bay Community College can double its current enrollment. And they deserve that. It's a wonderful community. It's a county that deserves a comprehensive community college. We need to continue to reinvest in self-improvement courses for the population that we serve, simply because that's their interest, whether they're reimbursed by the state or not. But in order for Tillamook Bay to have the resources on the fringes to make those kind of investments, we need to be successful in the other more core programs in professional, technical, workforce development, small business development areas. So there's, I think, good news to share. I think they're back on track, and I think you can look forward to some good things happening at Tillamook in the next few years.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Jim? I have a couple for you. What's the current enrollment? I'm not sure if you
about 320 FTE.
That's 320. In the self-improvement classes that you mentioned, are these things like creative writing classes?
Things like journal writing, painting, drawing, dance, photography. Things that most retired seniors would be enrolled in. Over 50% of the income in Tillamook County is transfer income, meaning it's coming from someplace other than Tillamook County. Okay. So it kind of tells you the age of the population, and a lot of retired folks and that have an interest in lifelong learning, which is, I think, an integral part of what we do in a comprehensive community college. It's obviously not the only part, and I think perhaps Tillamook Bay, based on the needs, kind of lost sight of, you know, the other things that we had to do as well. But I mean, that's where the demand was, and when we went out to try a passive bond measure, I mean, that's what I heard everywhere I went.
I believe you.
And so,
It's an excellent point that you make. I mean, it's when the community college loses its connection to the community, that's not a recipe for success. Can you tell me the timeline for? Are you applying for the full-time position?
I'm not. You're not.
And what is the timeline?
As soon as possible.
In fact, if anybody's listening today, right?
I have made a commitment to get them through this process as long as it takes, and we're in the process of a search. Have interviewed a couple candidates, and the timeline essentially was to have someone hired this summer.
Very good. I appreciate your work very much. On the going out for the bond, do you have concerns about double majority?
Absolutely.
Going in?
Yeah. I think we're going to call 7,000 people.
All right. Best of luck. Representative Glenn.
You triggered a question for me, Mr. Chair. Thank you. What do you consider the likely sort of service area for? I'm trying to figure out, you know, at what point do people think, well, I'm going to go north or go south?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or even centrally, do folks from, you know, Grand Ron, might they come over to the southern one? Or I'm trying to remember the placement of all the community colleges to think.
Right.
But what's kind of the service area?
Well, I mean, the service area essentially is Tillamook County. And North County goes up to Manzanita.
Mm-hmm.
That's the north part, Manzanita and Nehalem.
Mm-hmm.
Comes down through Bay City and Garibaldi and Tillamook, which is the major part of the population of the county, then goes down south to Pacific City, Cloverdale, which is where the high school is located. As far south, actually.
Neskowin.
Yeah, it's Neskowin, yeah, that's correct.
And how far south?
To Neskowin.
Oh, that's about the
right.
Southern.
So the majority of the students will
there's a very
come.
Natural break below Neskowin.
Right. Yeah,
right.
And so the majority
right.
of our students will be enrolled on the main facility in Tillamook, which is the central part of the campus. But we need to provide services. We have our small business development person in North County one day a week and in South County one day a week working with small businesses. If we get back into this self-improvement community education thing, it's going to be important that we have a presence in those communities for those folks. So,
one more, Mr. Chair. How long were you at LB?
30 years.
30 years. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for taking on this task. I knew they needed somebody. I didn't realize until you came today that that's what you've been doing. But you did a fine job there.
Been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Appreciate your work.
Jim Sorensen. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Jim Sorensen, president of Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, Oregon, the opposite side of the state. So we serve, again, we are a rural institution serving probably the largest landmass in the state, roughly about 20-25% of the state's landmass, and probably have far more cows than we do people in eastern Oregon. But we serve from I-84 roughly down or north of I-84 to the Nevada border. We also have CODs in operation in Burns as well as Lakeview. So it's a very large area. It's roughly a six-hour drive from our Ontario to Lakeview. So gives you a size of what we're dealing with.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenick.
CODs, please.
Contract out of district. It's a way of funding those that do not participate and provide local tax funding. So
thank you.
It's part of the distribution model. Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario is committed to finding ways to build and support our community's capacity for sustainable development. Our community college's mission outlines a role, but the vision is to provide access and prepare adults of all ages and backgrounds for new opportunities. We lay the foundation for a stronger economy through strategic planning and leadership development, workforce training, entrepreneurial education, and business assistance in our area. But in eastern Oregon, as in many parts of the state, we're facing some tough challenges. Long-term declines in agriculture, manufacturing, and timber threaten the way of life of the economies of many of our local communities. And in some of these areas, education is and has been often undervalued. We have a lower participation rate in eastern Oregon than in higher education than many of the other areas in the state. We also face real challenges to increase enrollment in service areas that are losing population.
Mm-hmm.
And yet those who remain in our areas still need access to educational opportunities that we struggle to provide in comparison to some of our larger schools, who enjoy more economies of scale, as you would expect, by serving larger student populations. Our students are also changing, however. The students who can't remember homes or schools without computers are starting to fill our classes. These students know how to access information. They may not be the greatest trivial pursuit geniuses in the world, but they don't have to be. They are information retrievers or information accessors. We recognize that most of our students will have careers that don't even exist today. We must prepare our students for change, to be flexible, to think critically. But these changes often cost money as we rewire our classrooms and purchase simulation health mannequins and health fields to help our students compete in these new fields of endeavor. While some of these issues may be challenges, are something we are used to dealing with. This all comes as part of our mission and vision, and Treasure Valley has worked to build partnerships, as one would expect, to meet these challenges. For 25 years, Treasure Valley has worked with Eastern Oregon University in a strong partnership. We were involved in what was called the Eastern Oregon Collaborative Colleges Program, which was discontinued about 5 years ago. Despite this funding, we have continued to work together and will continue to make it possible for our students to dual enroll in programs, much of what you've read more on the west side in the last few years, to earn as many as 7 different bachelor degree programs on our campus without leaving Ontario. And this makes a tremendous difference for the citizens in our area, particularly for teachers that have been educated through Treasure Valley Community College and Eastern Oregon University. In addition to working hard toward seamless transfer options for our degree-seeking students and to help professional technical students obtain the needed skills for employment, some of the other ways that we're working to build a local economy include our Small Business Development Center, which works with all of the local small businesses in the area, as well as Burns in particular, to enhance their skill and training. We have off-site centers, as I did mention, in Lakeview and Burns. We work with the ag industry, as you would expect, in Eastern Oregon, particularly in the beef, the horse, and crop production programs. We also teach such things as AI, and that's not artificial intelligence for those who may come from a more urban center. That's artificial insemination. We also have preg checking.
Same thing, right?
It's similar. Preg checking as well. So those are interesting things that I ran into. I did grow up on a farm, but had not been an institution that taught that. We also partner with business and industry. One interesting example is you may have read in the paper that Boise has had does not have a community college in their area, and we partner with some of the businesses in that area to provide some of the training opportunities. One in particular is Western Trailer Manufacturing, which builds about 15% of the U.S. trailers, semi-trailers in the country, which is located in Boise. That's their home base, and they built a sub-assembly plant in Ontario and actually came over there because of the workforce we have available and the good work ethic in our area. But we have welders that are trained. We're also doing advanced welding training for the business as a whole. That will start, as well as Simplot and some others in that area. So we continue work, particularly in the welding, which is pretty straightforward kinds of occupational education. We work with the ag industries in all cases. In a number of these classes, we have both high school and college-age populations enrolled. We're also doing one with young students, fourth and fifth graders, and actually talking to them about what the ag industry does today. And they have as many as 550 students signed up for a workshop, I believe it's this week, in one of the local facilities to work with the school districts. And they're bringing them in from all over the area. And that's kind of an interesting. We also work with the nursing, or we prepare nurses, and our nurses have passed at 100% pass rate, one of the best in the state overall, and we're very, very proud of that. We partner with Holy Rosary Medical Center in the area, which is our major hospital in town, and they actually provide about $80,000 in training to provide additional support for our program, as well as a lot of student scholarships and opportunities for them as well. So again, the idea is to try to keep many of the health providers in the rural economies, which is difficult when they can drive as close as Boise and have sometimes even better occupations or better jobs, starting maybe $3,000 or $4,000 higher, and that's very attractive. So it is difficult to keep them there. We partner with our educational service districts, as many schools do, as well as our high schools, and we have 250 students enrolled in CallCred programs during the year in districts on both sides of the border. We have tech prep programs and 2+2 classes that we run with the school districts. We also have what we call College Choice, and that's actually classes that juniors and seniors at good standing, B or better usually, can take classes at no cost to them on a space available basis. So if we start the quarter and we still have room in an English class or a math class, they can actually sign up for that if they're allowed to by the school district and take that at no charge to them, which gives and again, the idea is to recruit them to a college education because they do attend at lower rates than what they might in a more urban center. So it's to motivate them as much as anything. We provide the traditional continuing community education offerings, as you might expect, as any institution does. One of the other things we're doing right now is working with the National Guard. There will be an armory that will be built on the campus. It's in the fiscal year 2008 federal budget this coming year. It'll be funded this fall if everything goes well, as they expect. And that is in that budget at this point in time. It's also in the governor's request for funding, that about $11.5 million combined total funds in that. So that should happen this coming year. And we're currently just finishing the paperwork on transferring 7 acres to them, and it's on kind of the corner of the campus. And that'll give us increased rental facility as far as lease space available to us for future training. The idea down the road is to have an industrial training center that's located right next to that, and then we'll use some of the classroom space for academic training as well as the maybe a steel building for our occupational programs, particularly welding in one case. So that's for the future. We also have 3 federal grants amounting to $5 million, one in peer education training for No Child Left Behind, one in high school equivalency program for migrant-qualified families, and then one for improving institutions called Title III, which is a popular grant that provides more student success for students doing better in colleges and really adopting new programs to help them be successful. One of the more recent capital investments we made on campus was to build a new dormitory, which is very unusual for community colleges in this state. SWOC, or Southern Oregon, is one that has built one as well. But while this may not be needed in some of the more urban centers, it is vital to the ability to attract students in Eastern Oregon and some of the other rural areas throughout the state. The dorms are critical components of a retention effort. We know that students who live on campus are more successful, again, and particularly if they're coming from the rural areas. And this was a project that was talked about for many, many years. It replaces one that was about 40 years old, and it's funding through a certificate of participation, or COP as it's called, which is similar to a municipal bond. We borrow the money and actually paying that off with the revenue from the facility, and that basically cash flows. In our economically challenged service area, going out for a public bond to pay for an infrastructure needs a loan without additional support from the legislature is almost impossible. Our local residents already pay, as they do in many areas, as much as $1.20 per thousand, compared to about 0.5 per thousand in some metropolitan areas throughout the state. And we have support from our local residents, but we do need support from our legislative body in building a capital facility. I'm enthusiastic about our opportunity to be part of this capital construction request that we have proposed. It's the first building that will be built in 40 years on campus as far as a classroom building. And then we're number 9 on that list to receive matching funds for a university center, which I talked about earlier with Eastern Oregon University and its Community College University Center. It also provides particularly additional science space on campus. The laboratories are about 40 years old, and they are in need of upgrading. This is an economical way to do that. And we're embarking not only on a fundraising campaign to fund that. We'll go out for a local bond measure if we're successful. And again, that's difficult in Eastern Oregon to do. And the request was a small request. It's $4.5 million in total, or about $2.25 million that we would have to raise locally. And we'll do it under a certificate of participation, borrow the money, and do it that way if we have to. But we're intending to build that regardless. We know the way to a better future and stronger communities is through education, but in our rural areas, many of our residents are being left out of this opportunity as smaller schools are forced to continue raising tuition, as you would expect, to keep up with the demands of a changing workforce and increasing costs of technology upgrades. Every dollar we increase tuition makes it less affordable for our residents to go to school. We know that, and yet without increasing state support, we struggle to keep pace with the increasing costs at every level in this state. I want to thank you for your support, and I again encourage you to continue working to build a funding support level of $529 million, as you've heard before, in capital requests, 15 different requests amounting to $103 million from the community colleges. That will ensure our continued access to certainly rural Oregonians, as I'm speaking about, and community college education for all Oregonians. I'll be happy to answer any questions for you. And
Representative Klim. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question, I guess could apply to Ontario Burns and like you. What is the population situation in those areas? Growing or declining? Or
it's
changing?
It's flat to slightly declining, and it's the opposite of what's going on next to us on the other side of the river. So we serve a very unique area in that region. But we work, we charge out-of-state tuition for those that come to the other side and try to make up for some of the loss that we have in local revenue and our tax base. So there's ways to, we work together to do that. We struggle, probably the biggest problem is when you work with an area the size of Burns where it's a very small population in Lakeview. We're very tiny. We do distance delivery through interactive TV. We have classes with the high school that I didn't mention where we'll run them interactively on campus, and we may have two or three school districts taking classes as well as other areas in the region. So try to do it that way as well as web. And there's other partners from around the state that also provide distance delivery where they have web available. But not every area in some of these very rural communities even have that available even today. So it's an interesting challenge.
Representative Greenley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to comment on a question to thank you. I'm chair of the House Health Care Committee, and we're holding a hearing statewide through using the video facilities at a variety of the community colleges, six community colleges, including yours, and I want to thank you. We're talking about rural health issues, so you might want to join that discussion to talk about
it. I would love to do that, and we have an excellent working relationship with all of the industry in our area on that, and really both sides of the border as well, but our local hospital has really stepped up to the plate and provided assistance, and we'll continue to do everything we can to help that. So
I wanted to thank you for the use of your facilities.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said there was no community college for the Boise area?
There's no community college in Boise. I have a for-profit center that we actually operate in Caldwell, and if you read the news, you probably see the news on the east side about as much as I see the news on the west side. It's kind of a unique thing to be in, but we try to provide as much as we can for that area, but again, it's, you know, difficult to do when you have to have certain ratios in order to pay the bills and the overhead that we have, as well as take something back to the taxpayers of our district as well. So,
follow Mr. Chair, they have they have a four-year institution, University of
they
Iowa?
They have a lot of four-years. Yeah. Well, Boise State University is there, and it's 19,000 students, and then they have several.
No, they have a football team.
Albertson's kind of late.
And a blue field.
Phoenix and a number of, a lot of private providers, but not at the two-year level. So.
Interesting. Thank you, Dr. Swartz.
Thank
you for your work.
Much.
Thanks for being here. Greg Hammond?
Between them and Fresno State, I have nightmares about them every year. And we've got to do that.
You're going to do a documentary you saw on their season.
Boise State season last year.
Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Perfect.
Chair Buckley and the representatives of the committee, thank you for giving me the time to do what presidents love to do, talk about the college. I'm Greg Heyman, president of Clatsop Community College. The story I'd like to tell you comes in words and in pictures, so in your folder you'll have a presentation that I'd love to guide you through, because sometimes pictures do so much more than I can speak. We're, like all of our community colleges, we're a college that's driven by a vision. In the last year, we reviewed and revised our vision. We wanted to adopt language that helped us to to capture a sense of constantly growing, constantly moving, constantly looking forward. And so we tried to change our words. And so our vision starts with the word with continuously building and focusing on an educational community and focusing on learning and achievement for our students. We'll give you a copy of our mission as well, working to build a community that provides that open access to high-quality education. If you go through, you see pictures of our community. Not only are we proud of our college, but we're proud of the community that we serve. So you get to see some of the great parts of Clatsop County. A number of the presidents have mentioned to you our commitment to being comprehensive. And while that is sometimes a challenge, that is certainly at the core of our commitment as well. So we recognize that that is our work to provide not just transfer education, but workforce education, service education, continuing learning opportunities, developmental education. And we try to meet all those needs as they come to us in our communities. And so we continue to remind ourselves of that by the words that we use. I want to talk to you a little bit about the students we serve. As it indicates, 14% of all of the college-age residents of Clatsop County are a student of ours each and every year. And we define college-age students at anyone between 15 and 84. That tells you something about the mission of our college. And you have a picture of a woman, and her name is Wanda. Wanda has graduated from our college last year. She's 74 years old. In that same graduating class, our youngest graduate was 17. That tells you something about the range of people we serve.
Where do you stop at
84? I was going to say the same thing, yeah. Is an AARP on your back about stopping at age 84?
It's a statistical thing. If you come to us at 85, I promise you we will let you in the door.
Thank you very much.
37% of all of the 15 to 19-year-olds take a class with us every year. 27% of all the high school graduates from the public high schools in our county, and there are five of them, come to us in the subsequent year. I want to tell you a story about two of those students. We'll just say their names are Clark and Rachel. These are true stories. Clark came to us directly out of prison, a little different environment. Rachel came to us out of an abusive family situation. She came to us as a single parent with two children. They both came to Clatsop Community College to change their lives. Today, they happen to be married to each other. He works in construction, and she is a registered nurse for our program. And so people who struggled in our community, had hard beginnings, have used education to better their lives, and not only are their lives better, but our community benefits from them as well. Our community benefits from us in a lot of ways. Just directly, we spend $7 million in our county every year. And a study has indicated that $92 million of economic activity in our county are directly attributable to the college being there. $92 million is significant. But we do face some challenges, and I want to talk with you about three of them. First one is facilities, and you'll see some pictures. We like to think that we do some really great things in some not-so-great places. We've been cited on numerous occasions for having inadequate facilities, both in terms of the inadequacy of the space and the inadequacy of the access. And you'll see some great pictures of our campus with regards to the kinds of space we're able to provide our students and the impediments to access that our students face. We are built on a slope that the slope itself of our campus exceeds ADA standards. Not just the buildings, the campus itself. So we're riddled with stairways that separate not just classrooms from classrooms, but buildings from buildings and parking spaces from those buildings. Creating an accessible environment is an insurmountable challenge on our current site. Second challenge we face is employment opportunity. We're a county that was dominated by two industries, forestry and fisheries, seafood production. And both of those, while they are still present in our county, certainly don't dominate the economic or employment field in the way that they did. And so we recognize that we need to play two roles. One is educational and job training so people can move into new and emerging jobs. But also, we need to be an active player in creating new jobs. The third challenge that we face is funding adequacy and stability, and it's just a recognition that for us to achieve our vision, mission, for us to provide the kind of educational opportunity for the people of our county requires a sustained effort, and that sustained effort requires adequate and sustained funding. I just want to show you a graph of our planning graph that shows you our expenditures and anticipated revenue pattern under two different funding models. One is the $483 million, which is included in the governor's budget, and the $529, which we as community colleges are requesting. You can see that while either revenue forecast would indicate that we're able to build a budget that's in the black for this coming year, subsequent to that year, we experience deficits with the 483, and so I want you to be aware of that. So what are we doing with those challenges? And we call these initiatives for success, and I just want to, one of the things is that we're working hard to create a new campus, and we happen to be so fortunate as to have a local logging family which has actually given us the property for our new campus in Warrenton, and it's a location centrally located for the county. The county, we did some survey work, indicates that 66.5% of the voters of our county are ready to vote for the bond that is on May ballot, are ready to vote for that bond to help us get that campus. So we're working hard to move towards that campus that will remove those facilities challenges, the access challenges that we've been struggling with for the last 15 years. We're also working to expand economic and employment opportunity. And just some of the things that we're working with the Northwest Workforce Alliance, which is creating workplace opportunities not just for college students but for high school students. And we're working closely with our high schools to create those work experiences, because we know that if they can get some of those experiences in the high school, they're more likely to come into our workforce training and our professional technical programs in order to get the education they need to actually grow in those fields as well. We're expanding apprenticeship programs. We do workforce training. We're intimately involved with the economic development activities of our county, working with both of the major chambers in our county and with the county commission to create and stimulate economic activity there. We're also, to deal with funding, we know that we have to do long-term fiscal and strategic planning, and we see this as a partnership between the state and the local college. Certainly we're advocating for the $529 million in Community College Support Fund, support for capital construction, for financial student assistance. That's terribly important. Our students can't afford to go to college. It doesn't make any difference what we're able to provide them, whether or not they can have access. Sometimes money is the impediment to access, and so we need to make sure, and that's such an important bill. But at the local level, we also have a responsibility to stabilize or to figure out ways of reducing the cost to students, also finding effectiveness in our programs and our operations so that we can expand programs and do it with the resources that we have. But ultimately, our focus has to be on the student. We focus not only on access, but we like to focus on success. And what that means is that it doesn't help a student if we get him or her in the door, but what they experience when they come to us is another educational failure, which is perhaps what they experienced in high school. We want to make sure that they're successful when they come with us. And so we're investing in support services for students so that we can come alongside them and make sure that their experience with us isn't not just in the classroom, but outside the classroom is one which gives them the support and the ability to succeed in that class. We like to mention that we are a college. Our middle word is community. And we are a college that serves the people of Clatsop County. But perhaps just as important, we are one of 17 community colleges that makes educational access and educational opportunity real for all the people of Oregon.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Jim?
Sam Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two. In the report to the community, there was a statistic, approximately 35% of Clatsop College, their degree-seeking students receive financial aid, and I wondered if that number
is new enough to include any increases in part-time students.
No. We did not see a significant increase in part-time student utilization last year. We're starting to see that now, and I think that's true in a lot of places. Part-time students, for one thing, they're most likely students not coming directly out of high school. They're students that we have a harder time identifying and communicating with. So it takes a while for them to realize the opportunities that they have. And we're working on new sort of communication strategies to try and help them to understand the kinds of economic assistance that are there for them to go to college. And I think we'll see that in the future.
And if we get the shared responsibility model funded, which I think we will, that'll, again, provide new opportunities for people up the income scale that may not realize they could get the grant.
Yeah, it's a very important bill.
The other one, Mr. Chair, this is back in your handout. The college spends approximately $7 million in Clatsop County every year. Is that a fairly intentional strategy? I assume that's through contracting and other services that the community college needs.
Actually, the majority of that is personnel.
Labor.
So you remember about 80% of your costs at the community college are personnel costs, and most of our employees live in Clatsop County, and so that's our most significant expenditure and our most significant investment.
Since he's talking, I'll keep going. You might actually be my guinea pig on something, because I am curious about institutional purchasing in their local area. We have this new thing in the legislature called a teamwork bill where two members of each party can co-sponsor bills, and then it guarantees an automatic hearing and work session. And myself and three other representatives have a teamwork bill about trying to build in incentives for state institutions to purchase local, defined as sort of that county or their contiguous county, and then state products before they would contract with out of state. There's cost issues, but how's it working out there now in terms of non-personnel related purchases, desks, computers, if groundskeeping, if any part of that's contracted out?
Thank you for that question. Small institutions like us don't outsource a lot, and in rural areas, your opportunities for outsourcing are limited. We do make an intentional effort. For instance, when we send out RFPs for major purchasing, we make an intentional effort to make sure every contractor or every provider within our county is directly contacted and provided with materials for that purchase, and we do. If it's a facilities related issue, we do tours, and we try very hard to work with our local service and materials providers.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Does Clatsop have a relationship with one of our universities, a dual enrollment relationship?
We have formal relationships with two of the university schools, Oregon State University and Portland State University. We also have formal relationships with Linfield, private institution, provides for a bachelor's of nursing. So our nursing students are able to move on to the next level of their nursing education by moving to that institution.
At Portland.
Yeah.
In Portland.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. My district.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great program, and our nursing program is vital to our community, and we have been fortunate to be able to expand it in the last couple of years. And we partner with three hospitals, actually. One of them is in Tillamook, because we provide a nursing education program for that area as well.
Very good. I noticed in one of your handouts, your student that was awarded the Jack Kent Cook Scholarship, $90,000 scholarship. Where did she go? What did she do?
I don't know exactly where she went. Last I talked with her,
she took the money and ran.
She could go anywhere. She go, wonderful. Again, one of our more mature students, and she was shocked at receiving. And we're hoping to get more of those. That's a highly competitive grant, but we were so happy for her and moving on in her. Well, she's in her upper 60s, so yeah.
And one last, well, actually two questions, if you'll indulge me. The ratio of full time to part time faculty for you?
It depends on how you count it, but we provide about you know, that would be it.
Right.
You know, we have 38 full-time faculty, and we, you know, in any given term, we'll have about 75 different part-time faculty. But remember that part-time faculty are frequently only teaching one class, whereas a full-time faculty is teaching five classes.
And my last question would be on tuition. How has your school handled tuition increases over the past several years?
We've intentionally tried to keep our tuition lower than average. In fact, we have adopted a benchmark policy which says that our tuition will always be in the lowest or second to the lowest quartile of tuition for the state community colleges. We're currently at $60, which is slightly under than less than average. I think our students are challenged by paying that, but we do what we can.
Very good. Thank you so much for your work. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Joanne Truesdale. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Representative Buckley, Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanne Truesdale. I have the pleasure of serving for the last 2 months as interim president at Clackamas Community College.
How's it going?
Very well, thank you. I'd like to give you a little bit of information, some background about Clackamas, and then in reviewing the comments that my colleagues have already said, I've kind of winnowed mine down to some specific examples, and so we'll move on from there. Clackamas Community College is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year in the community. I'd like to say that I'm proud of being part of that history, as 27 years ago, I entered into Clackamas Community College as my only source of a college education. And 25 years ago, I graduated from Clackamas Community College. We serve Clackamas County with the exception of Lake Oswego, Boring, and Sandy areas. We serve about 27,000 individuals each year. We serve approximately 7,800 full-time equivalent students. 45% of our budget is dependent upon state funds, and currently we have tuition and fees that total $60 per credit hour. We too are in the lower portion of the tuition rate. Our economic development responsibilities and our solution to the economy we take very seriously. We are teamed up with the County Commissioners of Clackamas County, the Workforce Investment Council of Clackamas County, private industry, Clackamas County Economic Development, city officials, local chambers, our sister community colleges, our 17 public high schools and ESD, our private career schools, our private and public universities. We are a WorkSource Oregon participant, and we are connected with the Employment Department in the One Stop Center. We believe in the delivery of those one-stop services, and right now we're working with the Employment Department on a full implementation of iMatch skills to also include cooperative work experience activities for our students. We take seriously our contribution in benefiting individuals, employers, and the community and state needs. We are partnered with many efforts. We are part of the Green Ribbon Community Committee on Sustainable Communities. We are part of a Blue Ribbon Committee on Health Care. Manufacturing Road Trip is part of Why Manufacturing Matters campaign, and we're also partnered up with that. We also have a local performing arts center that serves the community's community repertory theater, and many of the local community members use that facility in order to bring community events together. I'd like to expand on a few items that are dependent upon this legislative session. Number one, we have a pipeline shortage. And we are filling the pipeline with both young adults and with adults in the form of career pathways. For young adults, all high school students are able to take a Compass placement test free of charge in all of our high schools. At Sabin Schellenberg Skills Center in North Clackamas School District, we draw from three area high schools. And they offer, and what we do is we offer through Sabin Schellenberg the opportunity for those kids to earn college credit, advanced college credit, while they are taking those programs at that local site. With Gladstone School District, we offer on-site college courses to high school seniors. In other words, our faculty go there to teach. With Oregon City School District, the high school is located literally next door. And students who can't, the school district that can't afford opportunity for professional, technical, or applied arts classes, those students are referred to us and we offer them on site. We are also a gateway to college program from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and we have many other high school, alternative high school programs that have been built upon 26 years of working together with our school districts. Currently, though, we offer limited services to Cambie, Estacada, Colton, and Molalla, much like the rest of the state. The rest of our county is fairly rural. As Dr. Sorensen said earlier, many of those communities also do not have necessarily broadband delivered to them, and many are still on modems, and some of that distance delivery is difficult at best. 2 weeks ago, on an up note, we had our district skills competition. We had over 1,600 students from all of the high schools come to campus to participate with employers and really show off the skills they have learned in their respective educational programs. In filling the pipeline and supporting career pathways for adults, we recognize that not all adults have the opportunity to take their K through 12 education in Oregon or even in this nation. To meet the demands for replacement workers and new workers, Clackamas has taken career pathways for adults very seriously. Using a grant from the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, we're currently redesigning curriculum for those adult basic skills and English second language learners. And we are taking that existing curriculum that we have in our professional technical programs and identifying those things which early on can be attained during their secondary skills program and be able to take that portion of a certificate and go immediately into the workplace. I'll give you some examples of those in a minute. But we are taking those degrees and articulating them also to baccalaureate degrees, so that there isn't a wrong door, nor is there a stop out in the pipeline. Because over 67% of Clackamas students work, connecting them early to their careers keeps them moving both academically and economically. Our examples. We have a great new program, Skills Training for Advancement in Retail, STAR program. Connected to the secondary skill sets of the business and communications strand for high school students, their college credit is connected towards the awarding of an associate's degree and an early certificate in retail management. For adults, connecting their secondary education program through those adult basic skill programs, their courses also connect to that entry-level certificate in the retail management program. Once they've completed that first part of their career pathway, they can continue on, receive an associate's degree in retail management, and add an additional 1 year at Merrillhurst University to receive their baccalaureate degree in retail management. This is an industry-driven program. In logistics management, funded this year by a grant from the U.S. Department of Labor, Clackamas is working to develop curriculum that skills up truck drivers to meet the growing demand for logistics workers. Truck drivers have increased responsibilities in customer service, in warehouse and inventory control. Clackamas uses Workforce Investment 1B funds to help support dislocated workers or unemployed workers referred to ITTR, which is a private career school, for their truck driver training. Once they've completed that, they come back to Clackamas and we'll provide the additional logistics technology and warehouse management skills in the curriculum to help make sure that they're successful in the new way industry and warehouse management is being delivered. This is an industry-driven program. We also provide two key economic development strategies. We're supporting clusters, specifically the healthcare cluster and the pipeline for nurses and allied health services. Those include dental assistants, lab assistants, x-ray technicians, etc. In and near Clackamas County are five major hospitals, and many healthcare cluster-related are associated with those facilities. Clackamas routinely turns away applicants in nursing and allied health care programs, and we know that addressing the nursing shortage is one aspect of the health care field, and we do that through a partnership in a grant-funded WIN program, which is partnered with local hospitals to train up immigrant nurses. The Sunnyside North County area, where Kaiser, Providence, and Willamette Falls have facilities, is the current location of our Harmony campus. It's co-located with OIT and occupying one of two buildings that was originally an elementary and junior high. And the Harmony campuses are requests for capital construction match funds from the state. Currently, one-third of that building is quarantined due to mold. And if you'd like a tour, it really does look like Roswell, Area 51. Covered in plastic, locked, and waiting for its demise. It's almost begs put me out of my misery. The $7.5 million requested in the GRB addresses the demolition of this facility and the building of a Phase 1 Allied Healthcare Center of Excellence. Again, this isn't just nursing. This is all of the support kinds of allied health services that support that cluster. Being close to a substantial area devoted to the healthcare cluster will allow Clackamas to better serve the incumbent workforce training needs of those hospitals and those healthcare providers, as well as a closer connection for our students who are needing clinical sites and taking advantage of those programs. Phase 2 of the facility will eventually allow for adult basic skills, customized training, small business development, and workforce development services, and we hope to secure those funds through a bond campaign coming up shortly as we're assessing when and where to go with that. The other economic development activity we have is supporting traded sector through manufacturing. Also located in the north part of our county and dispersed in rural parts of our county, Clackamas is an active participant in the Why Manufacturing Matters campaign. The brochure, the Manufacturing 21, it looks like a little roadmap, manufacturing roadmap, identifies Team Clackamas and our combined efforts to support our manufacturing partners through a road trip. This road trip has students, community leaders, and educators on the road seeing the various types of manufacturing environments. It provides the relevance and the relationships to the rigor of math, science, engineering, and applied technology courses. This has been so well received that even when the snow hit in January, all the school districts in our area were closed, the college was closed, 40 of us, and 19 of them were students, still showed up at JV Northwest in Canby to take a tour of their facility. And just to plug JV Northwest, they do specialize in aluminum tanks for brewery and medical facilities. At 529, we will be able to address the pipeline for continued employer needs. We'll also be able to sustain these particular relationships that are currently grant-funded while we transition them and build them up into industry-sustainable partnerships. Also, we're requesting the support again for the capital construction program that's not only just for us but also for our sister colleges. And certainly, last but not least, it's one thing to provide the access through the programs, the facilities through the programs, but the students definitely need the support of the shared responsibility model in order to completely fully participate in the kinds of offerings that we are providing them. My hope is that next session, Clackamas is able to report that these programs are continuing and growing and meeting performance measures that demonstrate their effectiveness in meeting the economic goals of individuals and this state. I thank you very much for your time.
Any questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Partly a question, partly a plea. You heard me say that I chair the health care committee, and we keep hearing about the extraordinary shortages, not only in nursing, but across the board in healthcare personnel. And when you begin to name the kind of healthcare personnel we're talking about, you talk about sonogram technicians, and you talk phlebotomists, and a variety of very narrowly defined kinds of personnel. Some are forced into that narrow mold by licensing, and we'll try and do something about that, you know, occupational therapy, physical therapy. But I wonder whether you've had any opportunity to explore the ability to train, cross-train personnel so they could, I mean, there's no reason why somebody can't be a phlebotomist and a sonogram technician and perhaps a, you know, a CAT scan technician, a variety of things. Have you thought about that? Have you done anything about that? And if not, what can we do to help you think that way?
Chair Buckley, representatives of the committee, I think we are in that process with the Blue Ribbon Healthcare Committee right now. Our Dean of Allied Health and Nursing, Maureen Mitchell, is working diligently to try and identify, even at the lowest level, the common denominator of core courses that all of the individuals need to have to meet, I think, the next level of training. We also have partnerships with the five hospital areas where already individuals who are working in those environments are coming for additional training. I think by asking the question, you keep in front of us one issue that's very important, and that's that as our economy expands and contracts and as new technology gets introduced, how are we ensuring that we're maintaining a threshold of skills and then just having to retrain or teach up or skill up on certain things rather than send people back to square one. And so I think by just asking that question and continuing to ask that question is very helpful. That's
Mr. Chair, can I follow up on
that? Yes,
follow. Yeah, I mean, I feel particularly desperate when I think about how we're getting, in fact, more and more specialized. And I think it is a first start to try and everybody needs anatomy, everybody needs physiology, everybody needs organic chemistry. But the real question is, when I think about how to get healthcare to Ontario or healthcare to John Day or mm-hmm. healthcare to Fossil, I'm not going to have 15 technicians in those kind of communities. It just can't possibly happen. And my impression is we're getting more and more specialized rather than less specialized. And somewhere we need to figure out how to begin to break that down. So I mean, I'm asking a lot of the healthcare educators to start thinking about how to change the world when it comes to those kinds of programs. And I'd ask you to keep dean thinking about that as well. Because I just don't think it's all that complicated to begin. I mean, we force people by licensure to get narrower and narrower and narrower in their scope rather than broader and broader and broader in their scope. It worries me. I think we'll try and get a bill in that forces the physical therapy and the occupational therapy boards to create a joint license for both of them and see how that works.
Very good, Representative. Any questions or response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
I would just mention that Clackamas also has a center in my hometown, in Wilsonville, that was developed in about 1991 and is a workforce training center mm-hmm. And started out as a high-tech, kind of a high-tech center. The work that they're doing there is just absolutely terrific. And I know that Xerox and Mentor Graphics and InFocus and Flare Systems in particular are very interested in what goes on the campus there because of the students that go there and then are able to go into jobs at those companies, which, of course, all have their headquarters there in Wilsonville. So I just wanted to just mention that. And kudos to Clackamas Community College for that. And they used to have one killer wrestling program, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They're not listed anymore, though, in wrestling. Dr. Wendy, respond.
Representative Buckley and Representative Crummel. The most important thing about the wrestling team is this year we did spotlight a 32-year-old wrestler who came back to college and participated in the athletic program. And they were back at national championships. While they weren't ranked first, they were good in showing. Our basketball team, however, was back at the NWEC. And the dilemma about what not to put into 5 minutes. Thank you so much for talking about Wilsonville. There are numbers of partnerships that Clackamas has around the county that are phenomenal, and that certainly is one of them, trying to keep all those together and connected within a five-minute period. So I appreciate your acknowledgement of that.
I must say, this is outstanding.
Thank you. I'll take that back to the marketing department.
It's a great sales piece. It's very concise and makes you want to enroll. So.
Well, you're welcome anytime.
Thank you for your work, and thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Fred Smith.
Yeah.
Please come tell us about Klamath Community College.
KCC.
Welcome. It's good to see you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here and get to speak about my institution, just like what was said earlier. For the record, gentlemen, my name is Fred Smith. I am the Community College President at Klamath Community College. We are located in Klamath Falls, Oregon. I thank you for giving me a few minutes to speak about my organization. We are the state of Oregon's newest public institution of higher education. We will turn 11 in May of this year. Last year we celebrated our 10th anniversary. So let me tell you a little bit about my district. We are not quite all of Klamath County.
The northernmost precinct of our county belongs to Central Oregon Community College, but with that, we still have about 7,500 square miles that we cover in our district. In that 7,500 square miles, there are approximately 65,000 residents, of which 41,000 live within about 10 miles of downtown Klamath Falls. So we have kind of an urban population and a rural population. We will see between 5,300 and 5,700 different individuals this year with classes served around our county, and that will generate about 1,300 FTE, which will make us about the fourth or fifth smallest community college in the state. So we're one of the small guys. Our district has been kind of the poster child for transition. It has transitioned from big timber to a service and retail community. Now, there's been a couple of problems with that because we have went from the third richest per capita county in the state to the third poorest. Oh. So we've given up a little bit, but there are some positive things. We're at the lowest unemployment rate that our county has seen in almost 50 years. And before the housing market got soft in 2005, there were more housing starts in Klamath County in 2005 than in the decade previous to that. There are over 8,000 homes on the books and sites to be built, and we are seeing a large influx of individuals retiring out of California because it's much less expensive than the Bend area and Chair Buckley, the Ashland, Medford area as well. But things are not all that bad, but there are some things that are kind of crazy. Our public school system, we partner very, very much with, but they lose approximately a third, from about a quarter to a third of their students through dropout rate from different things. Now, I would like to be able to say I could blame them, but I don't. Because if you look at the county school district, one of our two feeder schools, then the entire district, two-thirds of the students are eligible for free or reduced lunches. Some schools it's much greater than that, others are much smaller. In the city school district, the other district that primarily feeds us, over 55% of the students are eligible. Now these are students from kindergartners through seniors in high school. We have a lot of poverty in our area. 85% of the students that attend my organization are eligible for Perkins grants. Now, that doesn't mean they all take it, but of the ones who take the Pell Grant, 90% of those need less than $100 per year in contribution for their experience. We have a lot of very poor people at our institution.
If I could stop for just a second, if there's any cell phones that are on in the room, even if the your volume is down, you can still interrupt with the speaker system. So, can we have yours on, please? Thank you.
Even with two institutions of higher education in the Klamath County area, with OIT and KCC being separated by simply 7.5 miles, our county still lags behind the state average of individuals who hold post-secondary degrees by at least 10%. So, you know, it's a little bit tough to run an institution of higher education in Klamath. But let me tell you, there are some ways that we can do it. And with that, I'm going to tell you my first of two little stories today. And when I was a child, and I wasn't particularly bright, my dad pointed out to me that this is your finger and this is your fist. And if you want to get somebody's attention, use this. If you want to move them, you use this. And so you should always partner with your friends and your colleagues to do good work when you need to do good work. And so that's what we do. We partner with about everybody. There's a lot of guys in this room that we partner with. I'm going to walk you through some of those partnerships and what we have done with those. I'll start with the public schools. And with the public schools, we work for the provision of alternative education and GED preparation. And for working with them for doing that, they help us with our adult basic education programs. So it's a very good partnership we have with the school districts. When we start talking about the Oregon Institute of Technology, I could waste every moment of your time with the partnerships that we do with OIT. Last year, the governor came down and he was chiding us for not partnering. Marthan and I sat with him in the room. 2 days later in our paper, albeit 6 pages back, governor cites OIT and KCC as the model, the way institutions should work in the state. We're like, yeah, all right, that's the way the press always works. Right now with OIT, we provide developmental education courses on their campus. We bring things to them that they want to have. We have spent over $150,000 renovating the welding shop so that their engineering tech students can have a better welding experience, and I can run my welding program on their campus. We are doing some other things. We want to do some things in the future, but we'll go further with that. But the things that we do with OIT are incredible. In deference to Oregon State and to Lynn Benton Community College, long before that partnership started to mature, we had transparent students running between our two institutions because we modified our management information system to feed Banner our student information. So students would attend OIT and their professors would not even know they were our students. But the only way they could tell for sure was our students would get their grades faster than OIT, so they would be complaining about the professor's grades. So we did a little thing with that. We have partnership with the Southern Oregon University, and with that we had a tremendous bilingual educational teacher program. It put 13 bilingual educators in the basin, and I think it put at least an equal number in the Ashland area. We also partnered with Rogue, it should be noted with that, so it was Rogue, Southern Oregon, and us. We have partnered with Concordia University, which is the Lutheran University up here in Portland, because they could bring an educational degree program down to the basin. What we've learned from our public school partners is that if individuals come from the basin, they don't leave the basin. And so if you hire a kindergarten teacher who's from the basin, they're not going to leave the first time there's an opening in Ashland or Medford or something like that. So we're trying to build our own. And through Concordia, we've had two cohorts of over 50 students in the early education programs, elementary education. We have signed dual enrollment agreements, of course, with OIT and just recently with Oregon State University. With Oregon State University, we'll be working on a partnership with the Oregon Institute of Technology. All of you know that we need to begin our workforce education programs at the young ages, i.e. middle school and high school. I think that between Oregon State, OIT, and us, we can own that market to develop the technical teachers that we need, and we're going to be working with those two institutions to make that happen. God forbid any of you ever have a health problem in Klamath County, not because we have bad health care, but I don't want that to happen to you. But there are going to be EMTs that are going to come and serve you. And in all probability, they will have come through our EMT program. We work with the Klamath County Emergency Medical Advisory Council, and we give a section of courses to that group every year to make sure that the EMTs and the rural EMT intermediates are the best they can be for you as you're traveling through our county. So we work very, very hard with that group. Some people think that it's difficult to partner with unions. We say nah to that. We have an agreement with the Willamette Carpenters Union so that our pre-apprentices in carpentry get direct enrollment into their program. Jim Wilson is a tremendous man. He's the training manager down at Willamette. And we have one of our board members, Hank Murkowski, who has worked together. We got the deal done. It can be done. You just need to sit down and talk about what is best for both institutions. We've partnered with Plum Ridge, which is a long-term care organization in our community for the creation of nurse assistants. We built a small nursing assistant lab, so they conceded that to us, and they'll allow our students to just have their practicums on their sites. We're trying to do more and more, but OIT is doing all their things with the Allied Health Center, and we're trying to partner with them, but we'll talk more about that in a moment. We have partnered with nearly every community college that's sitting behind me, and I'll tell you about some of those. From Portland Community College, we know Portland Community College simply as mother. All right. John Carnahan was in here, and he spoke to Tillamook Bay wanting to become a regionally accredited institution of higher education. PCC facilitated are getting there. So as far as we're concerned, they're always mother, and sometimes we know them as big mother, but they are mother. They are our mother. With Rogue and Umpqua Community College, we've brought truck driving. We've brought truck driving into the basin, and we share the same drivers and that kind of stuff, and that's been very good for us. With Shemeketa, we've been partnering to try to bring nursing online in Klamath, and we're still going to make that happen. We got a little setback. The Department of Labor didn't think that we were worthy enough for funding. That doesn't mean we're not going to try it again. Right now, the state of Oregon is preparing two grants for the Department of Labor called WIRE grants, and we are partnering with Columbia Gorge Community College, Wayne Community College, and ourselves, because we're trying to do sustainable energy projects in the Klamath Basin. We'll use the knowledge of Columbia Gorge to try to promote wind energy. We'll use the strength and the knowledge of Wayne Community College for photovoltaics, which will aid our agriculture industry, and for solar heat, which will aid our growing construction industry. All right, so those are the new things. But last but not least, I don't want you to miss that we have partnered with Kingsley Field, with the Oregon Military Department. They, before 9/11, we were using their classroom space to offer classes. They were giving us instructors that could come and teach classes for us. And so, you know, after 9/11, things got a little bit tighter. It's a little bit tougher to get in and on off the base. So that thing's going, but it was a partner of ours. Just last week, we sat down with the county planners and the city planners, the Regional Economic Development District, and the Regional Workforce Investment Board to try to determine how the five of us together could bring forward the best future for Klamath that we could possibly do. So we got an earful of things that we should be doing, as well as everybody else. Learn a few things that we should be doing, and I could tell you more about that, but I'll just bore you with that. So, but those are some of the partnerships that we have, and what we're trying to do is trying to expand the education of our district. With that, I want to close, and I want to talk a little bit about investment, the investment we would like to see for our institution. And with that, I want to take you back to the last legislative session, because during the last legislative session, the Ways and Means Committee went out to different locations around the state. And I don't know if any of you got to go out, but they had one in Klamath. And much like what we have here today, it was 2 hours, and different individuals got to speak to the group about investments. And of the 36 or so individuals who spoke, 30 represented our institution in a positive light. And some of them told stories that even frightened me, and we didn't put them up to it. It was really interesting. One of our county commissioners, one of our students, gave a short presentation. And the only thing that John Elliott could say was, I have no way I'm going to follow that. Mm-hmm. So some of our students were telling about the horror stories that they've had, and they're trying to get better through our institution. And so with that, what I want to do is I want to tell you the final thing for the evening or for the afternoon. And I want to talk to you about hope, because and that's what we are. We are merchants of hope. My institution is that for its students. All right. My board, you know, we talked a little earlier about different things. Today is Monday, the 5th of March. All right. Our registration for spring term started last Monday. Today starts our seat availability scholarships. On my campus, if you are a high school student, and we don't care if you're public, private, we don't care, it's immaterial to us, if you can test into writing 121, which is collegiate comp, and math 111, then as of today, you're free to enroll, and any seat that's open in our institution is yours for no tuition. All right, we don't wait until we find out if the class is full. We put it out the first week. We have the majority of our students register online. We can do this. And so today is the first day that we will have high school kids starting to enroll in classes on our campus. We do the same thing for our professional technical education students. You know, we have high school students who want to be welders. That's fine. If they can show ability to benefit, then what they will do is we want you in a developmental reading, writing, or mathematics class, whatever you need to bring you up to college speed, and we will give you the PTE class, but we ask that you pass your basic skills classes. If you don't pass your basic skills classes, you blow those off for welding, scholarship's over. We want to support both sides, PTE and the basic skills. So we know a little bit about hope in our institution, and we're hoping for that. Last but not least, Representative Buckley, you probably watched this. We have this wonderful thing in Klamath Falls in the wintertime. It's called the Snowflake Parade. And you know, it will attract about 7,000 or 8,000 people downtown Klamath Falls. There'll be about 150 exhibits that'll come through. And for the first time in our college's history, we made a really, really nice float. And we brought it through this thing. And I couldn't go to the Snowflake Parade. And my daughter, when I came home, she was freaking out. She's 11 years old, and she's like, Dad, when your float came through, you could hear people whispering, KCC, KCC, KCC. And I go, Han, I hear that voice all the time. And she's like, Dad, your brain injury is not making me feel any better. But I told her, I said, Han, I go, that's the voice of hope. It's the voice of hope that's chanting for them. That's what we do. We bring hope. So, as I close today with you, I ask that you will be my partner. I ask that you will support our capital construction bill. I ask that you will support $529 million I ask that you be my partner. I ask you help me give hope to my students. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, gentlemen? I went off the top just in terms of demographics. With the population of the basin, do you have a young population? What's the future look like?
Right now there is no middle in Klamath Falls. We have a very, very large growing minority population, Hispanic mm-hmm. population, and we have a very large growing, very old retired population, but there is no middle. And so that's why the investment in Wired, trying to bring the solar energy for construction. I have three other things that I forgot here. I was going too fast. We're working on a partnership with the Oregon Institute of Technology and OSHU. OSHU is going to expand the number of nurses in the basin to 36. We'd like to add 18 more.
Right.
The basin will never use 54 nurses a year.
Right.
But what an odd thought to think that the basin could export nurses. Okay. I have a business that's prepared to build me. They're going to build me a facility for auto and diesel and biodiesel research. And they're just ready for me to get the money so I can buy my personnel. That's why 529 is so important to me. And last but not least, sitting behind me, you're going to hear from Preston Pullions. And Joanne told you about the Gateway program from Gates. That is something we desperately want to do at my institution, because that takes individuals who have given up on the public schools, given up on college, and we try to cycle them back, try to get them in college, get them their high school degrees, get them their college diplomas, and make citizens out of them that are contributing to the society, as opposed to those who take, albeit either on welfare or worse yet, in prison. So that's why the investment of the $529 million is so important to us, for the community colleges, and the capital, and as much to the financial aid stuff with the shared responsibility model.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. Okay. Best of luck to you. Thanks for being here. Preston Pullions. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and to the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to spend a few minutes talking about what going on at Portland Community College, but really in your support of all our community colleges. I'm Preston Pullions. I'm served in as district president of Portland Community College, and I just learned I'm the mother of Fred Smith. So I'm a little shocked.
Let's be proud.
I'm going to continue on.
Give him the one.
Let me just start, and we've got some material coming around, but let me just start kind of what I was going to end with, a little bit of a profile of one of our students that was written about recently in Oregonian. At age 18, Brandon Hogan was sent to prison. At age 27, he's making sure he never goes back. Hogan, who went to Roosevelt High School in Portland, spent more than 7 years incarcerated for robbery after his conviction 9 years ago. He admits he hung with the wrong crowd. However, the experience of being locked up woke him up and made him vow that he'd never turn into a career offender like his cellmates. Since being released, he's made good on his word. Brandon is studying to be a nutritionist at our Cascade campus. He's on the PCC men's basketball team. Once he gets his transfer degree, he plans to transfer on to Oregon State University for his bachelor's degree. Following that up with a master's degree is not out of the question for this young man. He says, "I've made many poor choices in life, but this term I have a 3.5 GPA. I do like the atmosphere at PCC and Cascade campus. There's no reason why anyone shouldn't succeed at PCC. Everybody, staff and students are helpful and very, very supportive." Brandon is simply, and this story is simply, one of thousands that we could talk about in our sector of higher education across the state. We're about building lives in terms of providing job opportunities, skills, and fulfilling dreams, as was talked about a little earlier. Let me just say that our district at Portland Community College serves about 1.4 million residents in a 1,500 square mile district that encompasses five counties in northwest Portland. This district is thought primarily as urban, but we also, including the largest city, Portland, but we also serve some of the most rural areas in our services in Columbia and Washington counties. The district includes some of the wealthiest areas, but also some of the poorest areas in our state. We are very proud of the fact that Portland Community College's enrollment is very racially diverse. our student enrollment is actually much more diverse than the population of our district. Our student enrollment now stands at unduplicated headcount of about 88,000 students. We're down from about 104,000 some years ago, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. We provide service through four campus locations, but we're actually located in some 100 or more sites throughout our service area. PCC is one of the 10th or 20th, depends on how you count, largest community college districts in the nation. In fact, we serve more college freshmen and sophomore credit students than the seven OUS colleges combined, which just knocks me off my feet as I think about the size of what we do at Portland. Just like the other community colleges in the state, we enjoy a great reputation in the community, and we provide significant economics as well as social contribution to our district. We organize in programs. I'm not going to go through all the programs. They're listed in the material that I'm handing out to you. We have three comprehensive campuses, support also by a very large center. Sylvania campus is our largest, serving about 25,000 students in southwest Portland. Rock Creek serves western Washington County, serving about 15,000 students on a 256-acre campus. The Cascade campus in North Portland serves about 14,000 students, at home of a number of our programs, including allied health programs. The Southeast Center at Southeast 82nd Division serves as home of our extended learning campus, and through that program community service, we serve some 53,000 students each year. If we receive the $529 million appropriation that we've asked for, we'd be able to expand programs in these various places, moving to our more comprehensive campus, particularly at our southeast location, and adding more professional technical programs like welding, building, construction to this low-income area of Portland. We also operate the Central Portland Workforce Training Center by OMSI, the Metro Training Center on Northeast 42nd and Killingsworth, and the Washington County Workforce Center at 185th and Walker Road. Our request to the legislature for capital funds would help us build a new workforce outreach center in Washington County along the light rail line to improve services to that fast-growing part of our district. We refer to this project as Willow Creek, and PCC's share of state funding for that would be about $7.5 million. Let me talk briefly about some partnerships we have, and we have many of them. We really believe this is part also of our mission and a very effective way to serve the community. Like our other colleges, community colleges, we have deep roots in the community and extensive partnerships. We have dual enrollment programs with PSU, OIT, OSU, Concordia, Pacific, Merrillhurst, and Western Governors University. We also have many high school connections. You heard about our Gateway to College program, where we were awarded a $13 million grant from the Gates Foundation to go throughout the country to set up this model of what we refer to as middle college, working with dropout or students who are not being very successful in high school. Locally, we're working with Portland Public Schools, and we have an 85% success rate with those dropouts through that public school program. We have two numerous relationships and partnerships with business. I want to go through all of those, but our most recent is through our PCC Rock Creek campus, where we were just named a regional working training center for the Caterpillar Corporation to provide diesel technician training for employees from five western states. We also have a partnership with Apprentice Training, City of Portland, and many others. One of the things that I initiated a couple of years ago was a kitchen cabinet where I meet on a regular basis with members of the Oregon Business Council, the Portland Business Alliance, Ganska Construction, Intel, Sotronics, Hillsboro, a number of other businesses and business organizations to be counseled and advised as to how we can serve and connect with businesses even in better ways than we do. The challenges and issues PCC face are not really unique to our institution or to Oregon Community Colleges. These are challenges all over the country that our sector is grappling with and will continue to face in the near future. Some of the issues, one, critical for us, is because it's about access and affordability, developing and maintaining an adequate resource base to keep our college accessible, to keep our tuition affordable, to maintain our facilities, to keep technology current and operate programs. The state and the college have suffered through some tough economic times in the past several years. I know we'll take time to recover from the past 6 years of reductions. Since the cut in revenues that began in 2001, PCC has eliminated or reduced more than 45 academic programs, eliminated course sections, increased tuition and fees, from $42 per credit hour to $73 per credit hour. Our tuition is now 36% of our operating revenue as opposed to 25% in 2001. As a result, enrollment has declined by more than 17,000 students. Programs most affected by our cuts are the professional technical ones because these are the ones that are most expensive to operate. In addition to the loss of student enrollment, the college has also lost full-time faculty as a result of the budget cuts. In effort to continue to provide the most course selection possible for students, we've added more part-time instructors and now replaced retired full-time faculty to save costs. This is a trend that we hope we'll be able to address if we get adequate revenue from the state. We are very pleased with the government's increased budget for the Community College Support Fund this year. It does not bring us back to the pre-2001 levels. I cannot stress enough how important it is that we maximize appropriation to the sports fund so we can begin to restore academic programs, build student support services, and enroll more students. If the legislature appropriates our requested level of $529 million to the Community College Support Fund, PCC will also add new job training programs, add full-time faculty, and increase student financial aid. In particular, we will add courses to provide pre-college instruction and college readiness to help those students who are not quite ready for college-level work and to build the skills they need, hire faculty in instructional areas that enable students to succeed academically and contribute to the economic vitality of our region and state, and add healthcare training in Washington County and welding and building construction technology for our residents in Southeast Portland. Other issues we face, we're working very hard to diversify our college faculty and staff to reflect the diversity of the community we serve. We're also working to maintain the comprehensiveness of our college, also stand responsive to industry need, and we want to work to continue maximizing partnerships with our business and industry and other governmental agency. Finally, I want to say that PCC is a community treasure that I'm proud to lead. I promise you, as we near our 50th birthday, we will be stronger, more vital, and more part of the lives of this community than ever before. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Questions? No questions from my colleagues here?
We've got some great presidents on the campuses, too. I've had a chance to work with Man Poppy, and then I just got to meet President Gatewood the other day and was reading a little article. But they're doing fantastic things. And at the Southeast Portland campus, when I hadn't had a chance to visit until recently, about a year ago, and the remade one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of utilization there. It looks like an incredible amount.
At the Southeast, Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, at the Southeast Center, we opened 2 years ago. We're maxed out in terms of available time. That's how fast that area is growing, and that's how connected the campus is with the community. I do have a great deal of support, a fantastic board of directors and campus president executive staff. Although Dr. Gatewood, who beats me at golf now, is in professional trouble with me, but other than that, he's a great campus president.
Great. Sure. I think what I'm curious about in terms of people who are just, well, especially in Southeast Portland, I guess, because I used to live out there as well, at I think it was like in 75th and Ramona. Do you find that transportation is a really big issue for people who, you know, may eventually want to go finish 4 years at PSU, but some folks that come from outside of Portland, myself included, thought, oh, well, Portland, you can get around pretty easily, but the light rail doesn't necessarily connect from Southeast, and there's bus lines and that kind of thing. So I'm interested in the transportation component.
Well, that's one thing is we plan for future growth in our area, and we're looking very closely at potential transportation lines because it is really a challenge. And one of the things if we're going to be competitive and offer quality opportunity at our institutions for community college, you have to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And transportation. Several things we do, and we would look at perhaps increasing some of that. We do offer transportation services for our students who are registered. That is very critical. Also, we work very closely with PSU transporting some students with drop-off points on their campus in downtown Portland. We would continue perhaps expand that effort. We're also considering, again, as we look at the population, particularly in the Southeast, potential of someday having a comprehensive campus there and to bring PSU to us in terms of a partnership that would allow students at PCC to take the freshman, sophomore courses and then junior, senior with PSU. So there are a number of partnerships we're looking at to address that.
That's great. Yeah.
On the subject of partnerships, and this is a parochial question, so forgive me for it, but you don't have a dual enrollment program with Southern Oregon University. and I'm wondering if we can get that going.
We are exploring a number of things. We are doing, though, we are looking at distance learning because of the size of our organization and what we're able to offer. We're looking at partnerships all over the state in terms of how we can do more distance training. We're engaged in a program, for example, one of our allied health programs of beaming that throughout the state. So really, education because of technology is becoming less place-bound and more technology-focused in terms of how we can do distance learning. So we're looking for partnerships wherever people think it makes some sense and we can serve our students.
Very good. Thank you so much. Thank you for your work and thank you for being here today.
Thank you for your interest and your opportunity to testify this afternoon. Thank you.
Jim, we have one more. Community College President Pat O'Connor. Saving the best for last.
Yes. It's a hard act to follow. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pat O'Connor. I'm president of Oregon Coast Community College. Oregon Coast Community College is a small rural community college in Lincoln County on the Oregon Coast since 1987. We're proudly celebrating our 20th anniversary. I've had the good fortune to be there for 18 of those 20 years, so we're very, very happy to be here. Lincoln County, we serve all of Lincoln County, essentially 1,000 square miles. Has two population centers, Lincoln City and Newport, a little bit of a challenge, 25 miles apart, held together by Highway 101, which is sometimes a tenuous connection. We serve all the way from Lincoln City to Yahats out to metropolitan area of Burnt Woods, so it's a rather diverse community as far as space. I'd like to thank you on behalf of all the community college presidents for taking your time to learn more about each of the community colleges in Oregon. As you can tell, there's a certain amount of pride that goes with each community college as being a reflection of its community. Well, you have had an opportunity to learn from all my colleagues about the 70 community colleges that were essentially all student-focused, comprehensive centers of learning and workforce development. We all share an interest in being affordable and accessible to all. I think you've heard that continually throughout the afternoons, both today and the previous session. I think Fred Smith, speaking about the power of community college, I would put a slightly different spin on that, is that we're a catalyst for positive change in our communities. We help people become the people that they want to be and try to help better our economic and social development in the area. So let me take this opportunity about talk a little bit specifically about Oregon Coast Community College, what makes it unique. And what I brought today are a few examples. One, of course, is being our signature program in aquarium science, and that's the copy of the DVD that I have in front of you. The aquarium science program trains students to work in public aquariums, hatcheries, as well as the retail ornamental fish trade. This program was created in partnership, and that's another word that you've heard a lot about this afternoon, partnerships, with Oregon State University and the Oregon Coast Aquarium. Graduates from this one-of-a-kind program have been placed in career positions throughout the U.S. and overseas as well. And again, this is something that instead of trying to replicate other programs, other community colleges, I think that's a strength of community colleges throughout Oregon. You have the maritime emphasis at Clatsop Community College. You have fire training science at Central Oregon Community College. They're all a different one. This was our attempt at looking at a signature program that would not only benefit already a strength at in the Newport area of Lincoln County, but also draw people in and help diversify our economy. Secondly, I'd like to bring to your attention our Small Business Development Center. It takes a special interest in the small businesses that help drive the economy of Lincoln County. Our small business, the definition of that is 50 or fewer employees. Well, when we talk about small business in Lincoln County, we're talking maybe two or three people. So something really based to help to meet the folks at their place of business. Our Small Business Development Center helps both startup and established businesses in Lincoln County. One of the things I'd like to bring to your attention is on the front page of the South Lincoln County News, not as much circulation as the Oregonian, but just as important to the people that are in the south part of Lincoln County, Walport, Yahats, Steel Rock, in that area, is a web designer that was helped by our small business management program. This is an example of a front page story of how someone has gone on to do good things by virtue of some of the assistance. We can't take all the credit for it, but at least help them along their way. So there's not only the value added of having this partnership with small business, but also of trying to make it even better for their economy. But Lisa Gray has done very well as far as to, if you try to Google her name on, her name comes up within the top 10 as far as something happening. Another service that we offer, something that's called LinkBiz. You've seen a number of publications. This one from other community colleges. This one specifically goes to all the registered businesses in Lincoln County as a resource tool, letting them know of our services as well as things going on, helpful workshops and other resources they may not think be able to access. Many times a challenge to small businesses in Lincoln County is getting to the place of the workshop. They don't usually have a large training budget. We're there to help them and to become successful. Third is, I think you've heard quite a bit in the over the last two sessions, a nursing program. Our new nursing program that began this year was made impossible in part through our partnership with Samaritan Health Systems. They are a very important factor in Lincoln County as well as in the Lynn Benton area, as well as far as of helping out and other local health providers. We're also indebted to the assistance of Chemeketa Community College in making this program a go. And this is a promotional flyer. You can also tell that we're trying to do a better job at branding as far as one of the things that small community colleges are often faulted for is not only, you know, what's your symbol, but, you know, sometimes where are you located in the community? And I'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. We do indeed have a mutually beneficial partnership with the Hatfield Marine Science Center. And what's with such new initiatives such as wave energy, which I think is a very important prospect for a new prospect in Oregon, as well as the Marine Mammal Research Center, the Oregon Coast Community College and the Hatfield Marine Science Center are poised to become major economic drivers on the Central Coast. We also have partnerships with the Lincoln County School District. We have an expanded options program that serves the juniors and seniors in encouraging them to take classes, get a head start on their college career, and work with a variety of economic development agencies in Lincoln County, the Quinebay Economic Foundation, as well as the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County. Finally, I think one of the things I'd like to bring to the fore is that Oregon Coast Community College is on the threshold of developing adequate facilities by virtue of passing a local facility bond measure. And this is something that didn't come to the fore the first time or the second time. It took three tries. It's one of the reasons I bring to your attention the article in the Oregonian from last summer is that the little college that could. We truly are that. I think a lot of the community colleges in Oregon tried to do their best in having a good connection to whatever their community they serve. Portland Community College can be very proud of being number one in the state as far as enrollment. I say very proudly that we're number 16 out of 17 just by virtue of the people that we're serving, and we're trying to get a higher penetration rate into serving our community. So I mentioned that we, after 20 years of having classes in rented, substandard, non-ADA compliant facilities, such as what Clatsop Community College has, Lincoln County residents have invested in the future. This is something that they're not necessarily an affluent area of the state, but they have seen the value of education and how it can transform lives. And college has prevailed, and we are involved in with our chambers of commerce, with our businesses, in order to make the success. One of the things that we did find out returning out to partnerships is that partnerships make everything go so much better for the residents that we serve. We have partnerships with Oregon State University with a partnership program and enrollment with Western Oregon University, Portland State University, and Eastern Oregon. Our tuition rate is $62 per credit hour. It's about in the lower mid-range among that. We found that in trying to keep a cap on tuition and keep it affordable, it does help with tuition. The portion of tuition in our budget is probably about 14-15% of our total. So we do try to keep that in mind as we're doing that. In closing, I'd like to say that it's expressed appreciation for having the opportunity to speak with you a little bit about Oregon Coast Community College. It is indeed my favorite topic to talk about. People's eyes usually glaze over when I usually grab them by the lapels. Let me tell you about my community college. The community colleges of Oregon are united in the request for the $529 million in operating funding. This specifically for Oregon Coast Community College will help to expand and sustain our nursing program, as well as help out with things such as online registration and other things that we're trying to do to help increase our accountability and our market penetration rate into our county. The capital construction funding package that will also help us to complete our facilities that we're trying to build, and the shared responsibility model for financial aid. One of the things I did notice is, as you've seen some of the campuses from around Oregon, about what they've had to make do with. We're currently in the Newport area in a former bar next to an insurance agency, a karate studio, and a hair salon studio. So it's kind of an interesting combination, surrounded on the outskirts by a bar, a drug rehabilitation center, and a pawn shop. So we're in kind of mean circumstances there. Our North County Center is in a former fire station definitely is, you can tell why the fire station left, but we're making good use of that. And finally, in the South County area in Walport, we are renting facilities at the Walport Forest Service Station. So with that, I will ask you if you have any questions. Again, very thankful for you having the time to talk to all 17 community colleges in Oregon. Thank you.
Representative Greenlick, you haven't asked anything for a while.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm intrigued with this nursing brochure. On the back page, there's a bunch of courses, some that are required and some that are recommended prior to getting into the nursing program. I've heard that it's very hard for your students to get into those classes. Is that the case, or is that not a problem in your...
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, what we're finding is that there's a lot of remediation that needs to take place before some of these students can get into things such as anatomy and physiology and things like that. As far as capacity at Oregon Coast Community College, we are indeed faced that, even though, as you can imagine, a small or rural community college, usually capacity isn't as difficult as just getting the class offered in the first place. Having the adequate space in order to have the classroom is our major challenge. We do have waiting lists for some of our classes, but it's, again, our major challenge, just that our rural institution is having the class offered in the first place. I don't know if that's...
Can you help me with that? I really don't understand. I mean, the question is, if your students need to take these three classes mm-hmm. in order to get into the nursing program, can they get those three classes?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, they are available. We do not seem to have, once we have the class being offered, we don't seem to have trouble finding a place for them. There aren't seem to be limited seats. It's just getting the class in place the first.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The existing places and the locations that you described and sometimes questionable neighbors and things like that, are those all under the new plan? I think I read about three new buildings. Do they all then go vacant for your uses and you move everything to the other place, or there's still going to be some offerings in each of the locations at the current spots?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, what we are going to be in the Newport area, I'll take them one by one. In the Newport area, we'll be vacating that area. It is essentially an older building that is primarily due to limited parking, suitable for retail. That's one of the things that we've failed to become over the years to become good neighbors by virtue of our students parking and business parking lot, things like that. So that will go back to being part of the retail. In the South County, we're very happy to actually to be moved out of that area because that means that the Syslaw Rangers District is they're moving from Florence, coming back up to Walport, which will be 55 new positions in the Walport area. So we're very happy to vacate that area as well. And in the North County area, what we'll be doing is we've been working with the City of Lincoln City and some other individuals to sell that particular property to move to out of the tsunami inundation zone. One of the things that you'll see in our various buildings is that we are doing it, we're moving closer to our high schools as far as to have that shared use, and also to be working, especially in the Newport area, in a planned development. It's located in South Beach, where we're going to be located adjacent to a commercial area and an area for affordable housing, which is very scarce in Lincoln County. So we're, to answer your question in brief, we're moving to different locations.
We won't tell the Lane County members that their jobs are migrating to Lincoln County.
We'll mention that.
And that'll be out of the tsunami area in South Beach?
That was the...
Yes.
Is that the Lincoln?
Yeah. All of them will be out. We're currently at an elevation of 9 feet in the Lincoln City area, and in the downtown area of Newport, we're a little bit above that. But again, that is something that the Community College Board has made very explicit, is that they want us to be out of that area as far as to make sure that we're a staging area for tsunami preparedness.
Mr. Chair? Can we say a comment? Yeah. I just want to congratulate you on, little... pamphlet for the local businesses. It is a very good idea. I myself have taken advantage of the Chemeketa Small Business Management Program, somebody told me about it. I can't remember how I found out, but if someone had went to the Secretary of State and I guess looked up City of Salem and then mailed one of these, that's a very creative, good way to kind of get it out to them. And there's lots of helpful things I'm sure you get a lot of people who this is how they find out about the programs. And then so this article too, Lisa's her efforts to give back to the program, it sounds like, that helped her get started. I think it's great because one of the things we learned in mine, which is very true, a lot of times you get so busy working in your business that you don't work on your business really at all. You just do the work of it. And I think it's great that she, and it sounds like you, promote people thinking about their businesses more globally than just the work they're doing at that very moment.
We've learned quite a bit from our community college partners. A lot of the information you see about LinkBiz and things like that, we've learned from such as the TED Center at Chemeketa Community College and things like that, has been very helpful as we're still a relatively new community college.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And I congratulate you, too, on your persistence of going after the bond and your success in having that pass. And I hope to see a picture of your face when the building's open in 2008 and see the smile.
Very excited. I'd like to thank you for your support.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for your work.
Thanks.
Appreciate you being here. Gentlemen, with that, I'm going to close the informational hearing from the House Subcommittee on Higher Education.
Two box bookkeeper.